a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Thank you for having me here. My name is Brian Gosch. I'm the House Majority Leader of the House of Representatives. A couple things I want to talk about today are a couple of the governor's proposals that are going to be working their way through the legislature this session. Of course, you have the budget, which must be balanced, and that always becomes a big issue, and your typical discussions over funding for education and Medicaid providers and state employees, which we have every year. But in addition to that, two of the major proposals that will be working their way through the legislature are the governor's juvenile justice reform package, which has a hearing right now in Senate State Affairs, and I'll be leaving shortly to testify on that bill. That came as a result of a work group that met in 2014 over the spring, summer, and fall, similar to the work group that met in 2012 to discuss the adult criminal justice reforms, which resulted in Senate Bill 70 passing overwhelmingly in both chambers in the legislature in 2013 and has been implemented. Senator Teason worked on that bill as well, and he's part of the Oversight Committee, and he could address that if he chooses. Preliminary reports are that the changes that were implemented in 2013 are having a positive effect, and the goals of that legislation are being met so far, reducing the rate of recidivism, keeping the public protected from dangerous criminals, and reducing the costs of corrections. Along those same lines, with the juvenile justice reform package, the idea is to accomplish those same tasks and to do so by having those kids stay in the community with third-party providers to assist them in getting resources and getting correction at home. They're able to stay in their households. They're able to be parented and have that home guidance instead of going to a state correctional facility, which hasn't proven to always be successful, hasn't proven to always stop, or in many cases not stop recidivism, and is also very expensive. So I'm going to take off shortly and take a look at that and help, and if I can, help pass that bill out of committee. The other major proposal by the governor this year and by Senator Valley are the funding for highways, roads, and bridges. There'll be a lot of discussion throughout the legislative session on those topics, on that area, and trying to determine, one, if there's a need, and two, then if there is, what's the best way to fund those needs for highway and bridges for maintenance, construction, or expansion. I would anticipate a very spirited debate on that topic as we go forward. Thank you.
Let's turn it over to Senator Teason, and then we'll ask questions on the juvenile justice, if you don't mind, before you quickly leave, and then we'll kick off the rest of it, if that's okay.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Senator Teason.
Thank you. Senator Craig Teason, District 34 from Rapid City, and I've been asked to come and speak a little bit further about the juvenile justice reform bill. I think Representative Gosch covered many of the key points. The process certainly followed a process similar to what we used for the adult reforms. We tried to, you know, base decision making on information and research. Some of that, you know, was a difficult project to, you know, collect all the information to, you know, find out what kind of kids we got in custody, why they're there, how long they stay, those sorts of things. We found that in some cases, the issues that we found in the adult system turned out to be the same issues we found in the juvenile system. For example, we found in the adults that availability of services, especially in rural areas, was causing our judges, frankly, to send people to prison because they didn't have any other options. Well, some of those same issues occur in the juvenile system as well. And so we need to look for better options of what to do with kids rather than send them to Department of Corrections. Obviously, there will be some juveniles that need to go to Department of Corrections and need to go to facilities where they can receive very intensive treatment. But in those cases where we can take juveniles and treat them in their communities, leave them in their family units, we need to do that when we can. And I really think that's sort of the, you know, the 50,000-foot view of the juvenile justice reform is to try to provide, as we did with the adults, more services up front. And try to carefully sort those that we need to send to Department of Corrections, and treat others in their communities as they stay in their family unit. Obviously, the result of that, hopefully, is that we'll also save money. That's an important secondary issue. Our primary issue is to, you know, try to get the best results possible that we can from our juvenile justice system. I'm very excited about this, as I was excited about the adult reforms. This is a significant policy shift in state government. We're very encouraged by what seems to be happening in the adult system. It's a little bit early, but based on that, I think we have some enthusiasm and momentum for the juvenile justice bill, which, as Representative Gosch said, is being heard in Senate State Affairs Committee now, so the process is starting. And I'd certainly be willing to entertain any questions about that in particular, as I have to run off to another committee meeting as well.
Are there any questions on the juvenile justice reform package going on right now? All right.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll just continue on. I don't know what you guys are going to want to chat about, but I guess I'll just kind of briefly just start. The session's been kind of slow. The first 2 weeks have been a little bit slower than normal, I think, over the last 11 years. I think bills are coming in slow. We've got a new legislative research council. We got some cautious folks, some young folks, and they're working through some bills pretty conservatively. They're doing their job, but they've told us we're not going to miss bill deadlines, so that's a positive thought. And with that, on appropriations, a couple of the big things that we've done over the last 2 weeks, we did a 20,000-foot view of the budget, a little bit more deeper dive with Commissioner Dilges last week. We spent 3 days with Commissioner Dilges working on revenue numbers, trying to get our feet wet on revenue, especially with the new members that we've got. And we started working on the state health plan. That's always been a hot button issue in previous years. This week, we spent the whole week on education, working through funding formulas and what the needs are, whether it's technical institutes or K-12, what the needs are out there, how education is funded currently, how the governor is proposing to change the funding mechanisms, and then kind of just working through the technical institutes and their needs as well. So that kind of sums up what I've been doing over the last couple of weeks, and I'll turn it over to you. But next week we start on Medicaid, which is again number two top priority for the legislature. So go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Don Hager from Sioux Falls, District 10. Happy to be here with you today, and obviously in addition to the budget, which is always a big deal, is the highway and bridge funding issue. That's kind of a central topic, I think, this year. And there's a significant need. We had a highway needs and finance committee that held six regional meetings over the summer. They talked about surface transportation needs and funding solutions, that sort of thing. I can tell you we have about 83,000, nearly 84,000 miles of road. About 10% of those miles are state in the state highway trunk system, but 67% of the traffic occurs on those highways. And so we want to make sure that we have a good infrastructure, good highways to transport goods and services. Now, in addition to the state trunk system, we also have a lot of county and township roads, or what I like to call farm-to-market roads, and those are very important in the state of South Dakota, where we're so dependent on agriculture and ag processing. Now, we have issues with some of those roads as well, and with some of the bridges. Some of those bridges were really designed for a time when ag equipment was much smaller and much lighter, and the roads are narrow, and some of them have some maintenance issues. And so the Highway Needs Committee recognized all that, and they, led by Senator Valley, proposed some legislation called Senate Bill 1 that contemplated nearly $100 million of initial increase in funding for the roads between both the state and the county and township. But the governor also came through with a plan that that looks very interesting, and what that is it's a little more restrained, but it puts emphasis on spending money where the where the traffic is, and so there's a lot in flux. A lot of things could still change with between what's been proposed so far and what the end work product will be. And so we look forward to working with that issue and making sure that we have a good infrastructure here as far as transportation goes.
Representative, go ahead.
Well, thank you.
Turn your mic on the mic.
Sorry. There you go. Jim Boland, State Representative, District 16. I'm pinch hitting for Representative Gosch. He requested that I come since he had to leave to go deal with the juvenile justice bill in Senate State Affairs. Just briefly talking about some education issues. There are some clear shortages in particular areas as far as education is concerned in South Dakota. Most of those deal with math and science, special education, and certain music areas as well. I think actually, and I've been quoted in the Argus about this before, is that the bigger issue that we have, salaries are an issue, but a bigger issue is just demographics of the state. There are lots of teachers who will be retiring in the next, between now and 2020, in the next 5 to 6 years. There's going to be a lot of people who are not, may not be eligible now. And that is a that's a genuine part of the question here, whether the salaries were extremely high or extremely low. This actually is true for the entire United States, whether you're in Connecticut or New Jersey, where teacher salaries are much higher than they are here in South Dakota, or in any other portion of the country. It's there's a demographic component of this that I think that, that we don't want to we don't want to lose sight of, and I have I've been quoted on that prior to coming on public TV here. The other thing I'd like to mention is that the a clear impediment to moving forward on this issue, which in certain areas is genuinely real, are the reserves that a number of school districts have. I think that's undeniable in the minds of many people, the elected legislators here. So I think we need to keep that in mind. I don't think the South Dakota legislature is going to compel school districts to shed themselves of reserves, but at the same time, I don't think we can ignore that as a very genuine and real component of this whole circumstance we're dealing with at the present time, which again, and I was here to hear what the opposing party said, is it's not going to be solved this year or next year. This is there's going to have to be a thorough study of this. The other thing I'd just like to mention real quickly is that in 2012, we did vote not just on teacher salaries, but on Medicaid and funding and these type of things and money for schools as well. And I was defeated by the voters. That proposal only got like 44-45%. So it's a genuine problem, but it is more than just salary. There's a demographic component to it. There also is a public perception component to it, along with the salary component as well. And I'm hoping that the South Dakota legislature can move forward this year and next year to work on this issue, because there's no doubt that South Dakota at the present time, and for many years in the past, and I was a teacher for 32 years, compared to other states, we do have some of the lower salaries in the country, or perhaps I think it's accurate to say we have the lowest in the country. But it's not an issue we're ignoring. Will we solve it this year? Probably not. Probably not. But it's something that myself and others are going to – I've got a couple of bills that I will be bringing to perhaps look at some of these issues and see what people think about some of my ideas along with others. Thank you very much.
I guess we'll just open it up to questions. Any questions? Otherwise, I will continue on the education discussion. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was probably going to follow up on the education discussions. First of all,
Could you outline maybe a little bit, you were talking about in appropriations, maybe dig deeper into what the discussions you had, and especially on, I think you mentioned something on changes to the funding formula. Could you maybe expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Well, the governor proposed a change in how the general overview of the funding formula for education is going to be fundamentally the same. The per student allocation is going to be $4,876.76. The schools will continue to get that. The schools will also continue to get technology, money for technology, and money for assessments, and money for sparsity. Those numbers now, though, will be wrapped into the need calculation when talking about property taxes. So we spend $11.2 million on sparsity, technology in schools, and assessments at the state level for general fund. Now that is going to be split between the local effort and the general fund. And in doing that, that gets us to the 2%. But it's important to know it, the number 487676 is the base number. The technology in schools is going to be on top of that, and the assessment dollars are on top of that, and the I forgot the third one.
Sparsity.
Anyway, sparsity number is on top of that. So we're going to be treating all of the pieces of education funding similar to small school assessment and the English as a second language. So it's going to fall in the same calculation, but it's going to not affect the PSA going out to the schools. It allows us to leverage additional dollars and only costs doesn't cost the general fund a whole heck of a lot more. It actually saves us about $100,000, and it leverages another $2.6 million at the local level. The reason we're doing that is because it saves the cost-benefit analysis that was done on technology in schools. I think they were talking about 15, and I guess I don't have the exact numbers on here, and I will have to get them. My intern has them upstairs. But the economies of scale when our school districts, or all of our K-12 systems, our technical institutes, and our Board of Regents all share email systems, they share assessment systems, they share Wi-Fi, they share their internet access. All of those economies of scale through the state saves us buying power. And so I've got the exact cost savings that we do by doing it at the state level in those capacities, and I can get you those numbers. So, but that's kind of the big change. We're not actually changing the formula at this time.
So how will this affect schools then? Is this more of a shift than to a local level of?
It will not affect the schools at all. It is important to note the way you look at funding education, the total need is $650 million out there. That is split between all property levels and all property taxes, and it's a general fund split between the state dollars and the local dollars. So you take funding of education and it costs $650 million. There's the local part and the state part, and we're going to try to maintain that balance. What will happen is, in order for us to get from the 1.5% statutory increase to education, it gets us to the 2% by leveraging an additional $2.6 million of additional local effort spread across the state. But it will not impact necessarily the schools themselves. They'll still get their PSA. They won't see any change in their technology dollars, and they will not see a change in their assessment dollars, and the sparsity dollars will still be funded. We'll have graphs and pie charts, and we'll get that all. Yeah. It took the appropriators 3 days, and then a meeting with the Department of Revenue and Mr. Howdy Sheldy a couple of hours in the afternoon on Tuesday, in addition to the state's economist talking through all of the numbers as well. So before this bill actually gets passed, I believe it was sent to Senate State Affairs, before it gets passed, there will be a good understanding of how the money will continue to flow. The schools will not see any major change, other than they'll get their PSA, they'll get their technology numbers, their sparsity numbers, they'll get their money. Yep.
don't know if there's anybody on the line or not, but if there is, please jump in so I'm not the only one asking questions. Going back to the demographic issue, you said that was an issue with the teacher shortage. Could you just tell me what you mean by that? Are you talking about retiring teachers versus incoming? And could you talk a little bit maybe about what needs to be done to address that?
Yeah, thank you. One of my other responsibilities, I'm chairman of the Retirement Law Committee in the House, and we'll have a hearing on Monday on some bills that don't really impact that. But I've been able to see, you know, and these aren't secrets or anything, but you can see the number of people in different categories who are a part of the South Dakota retirement system who are now eligible for retirement or who will be coming eligible for retirement between now and 2020. And this is an issue not only just for education, but for the whole state. As a result of that, we are going to see, I think my term is, we're going to see the backbone of the South Dakota education system, very likely people with a lot of experience and a lot of commitment to an excellent field be just naturally, not because they don't like education, they get to be 60, 65 years old, they're going to retire. And the point I was trying to make is that that's a component of this issue. And it probably ought to cause us to focus on this a little bit more. Salary and pay is an issue. There's no question about that. That's undeniable. But it also has to be put into the context, I would say, of the fact that we are going to have such a tremendous number of people retiring as well. I've told young people that I know that if they're interested in going into education, now is a great time to go into education if you're committed to the process, because there will be jobs available. That's undeniable. Now, to help them, we're going to have to, over the next 2-3 years, hopefully, you know, we're going to have to take some steps to lure more people into education, if I can use that, to help us to fill the classroom needs that are going to be out there. And it's just, you can, if you look at the data, look at the statistics, you can see that the wave of retirements is going to be there. But that applies to all sorts of fields in South Dakota. So we're going to have to make some steps to deal with that. That's what I was trying to emphasize.
I think I'll just quickly piggyback onto that from my perspective. I think if you look at, because we had the technical institutes in the Appropriations Committee just yesterday, we need to look at all workforce sectors. We are seeing a baby boom population retire. My parents are retiring. They were the workhorses of this country for so long, and it's not just education, it's everywhere.
Right.
If we want to go and talk about education, I think, as we all know, education's always a priority. They get usually the first tax dollar that we can put together, and they get the last tax dollar that we can scrap together. I mean, this is something that we talk about constantly here in Pierre, as far as how do we get education more money and how do we utilize technology. The question in regards to the potential teacher shortage is not a discussion that's solely alone with the education community. It's across the state. If we talk to the technical institutes, they'll tell you they don't have welders, they don't have machinists, they don't have linemen, they don't have, and that's pay too. They're competing with guys in New York City and linemen, and they can't keep people here. They train them here, but they can't keep them because they can get paid in New York City way more than what they can get paid here. So, I mean, this is a discussion that's not just across education, but it's across our state and it's across our entire workforce. But if we want to consistently talk about education and how we fund education, I think we need to start working on what other industries are looking at in South Dakota and starting to utilize technology a little bit more. We've got some great technology in our schools. We are ahead of the game. We're number one in the nation when it comes to wired schools and access to technology with our children. And our teachers have that same technology and their same access. I think our schools, I'm going to challenge our schools to start thinking, how can they utilize technology to help with the teacher shortage? Is there some things that we can do? I grew up in Madison, but Oldham, Ramona, Nunda, Rutland, I mean, they combine for a 9-man football team, but don't combine for academics. Where's our priorities? That's my personal feeling. But then we've got a lot of technology out there with sparse districts, and they're never going to be able to get a math teacher out in Faith and pay them $45,000 or $50,000. So let's think about how can Faith get a high quality math teacher, and what do we have available? What tools do we have in place in order to get them a highly paid, highly skilled math teacher? And let's look at it. Let's figure out what's our problem, and let's find a solution. Do I think it's going to get done this session? I don't. But do I think that we are working in that direction? I do. I think we are working to get highly skilled people, not just in education, but in linemen and welders and all sorts of other workforce needs that we have out there. I think we're going to have to start coming up with creative solutions to spread workload. And we do it in accounting because we have a workforce shortage in accounting. And we use technology, we use the resources that we have available, and somehow the work gets done. I think we're going to have to start employing that in state government and education and other industries that are out there. We're going to just have to figure it out.
And if I could just piggyback on what Senator Peters said, you know, and I'm fundamentally in agreement with her. We have, in South Dakota, we have that image of the one-room school and the local school, which is very, very deeply ingrained in our psyche and is very, very important to us. And at the same time, we're facing, you know, we want to use as much technology as we can to make that. We have pretty limited taxes by choice. And so we have this, a lot of things kind of working almost at cross purposes to each other to try to bring this all about. So it's a, you know, you've got folks who want to maintain their local school, and at the same time you've got a lot of other components that are out there, and I support, you know, people wanting to keep their own school, but it is and when you add the demographic factor into it, it causes, there's some issues, no question about it.
Well, and you know, I'm just going to jump in a little bit, and I just want to take a bigger picture view of things here for a moment. You know, certainly education is an important issue for us, but we always have to remember we have a limited pool of resources here in South Dakota, and our challenge as legislators is always to figure out, okay, where can we take these dollars and use them most effectively and maintain somewhat of a balance between the different needs that the citizens of our state face. Certainly education is one of those, K-12, higher ed, tech ed, all those, but we also have to consider those that can't care for themselves in terms of Medicaid and Medicare and that sort of thing. So we have to look at those folks as well. And then also, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we have to remember infrastructure, and we have to remember having an attractive business climate so that our economy grows so that we can fund government. And so we have to look at everything before making decisions about you know, where are we going to spend this money. And I think we do a good job. We're always listening. We're always talking to stakeholders. And you know what? The people of South Dakota are happy with how we've done. I will tell you that. I think, by and large, if you were to ask your neighbor, they would say, we have a good school. We like our school. We like the education our kids are getting. And they would also say, you know what? We have a good health care system. We like our doctor. We like our hospital. And we're happy with that. And so I think it's important to remember that we have a good thing going here in South Dakota. And so I never want us to lose sight of that.
We have a question right here.
I just wanted to see if there's any questions on the phones.
Nothing. That's it.
Thanks for your time, everyone.
Thank you.